It is May 8th. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
And we are on page 300 in Parsha Shmos. I want to tell you in advance, we're going to end slightly earlier today because I have to daven mincha. So we're going to end a little bit earlier than we normally do. So we're on page 300. And we are still in the episode of the burning bush. Thank you very much. As we began last time. Now, I mentioned to you that one major theme which is going to come up regularly throughout this encounter between Moshe and Hashem, Moshe's first prophecy, is the name of Hashem. And I'd like to begin by putting some of the names on the board. We can't actually write the names, because if we did, we couldn't erase them. So we're going to write some of the names, but we'll make them we'll alter them a little bit. Some of the names of Hashem on the board, so that we can compare some of the connotations. Now, when we talk about a name of Hashem, we've discussed this in the past, a name is meant to define the essence of something. That's what a name does. And as we know, Jewish parents get some form of minor prophecy, of divine inspiration when they name their child, that the name should reflect the essence of the child. Because how would you know, with an infant, how would you know what the essence of the child is, as much as my grandmother insists that she knows immediately upon birth exactly what the child is all about. But we know that that's, at least not for mere males, that's a very difficult thing to do. So a name defines the essence. With Hashem, we can't define his essence. By definition, since we are created beings, we can't know the essence of the Creator. It's impossible, by definition. So when we talk about a name of Hashem, it means that which reflects what we do know about him, which is the way that he chooses to present himself at different times. Sometimes Hashem will present himself as merciful. Sometimes Hashem will present himself as the judge, and different things of that nature. So the name will reflect the way that Hashem is presenting himself at that time. And there are different names of Hashem. There are some names that double as other words. For instance, the word Shalom, which means peace, we've mentioned this in the past, that is one of the names of Hashem. It's one of the names of Hashem is Shalom, but of course, Shalom means peace, and we have boys, it's a boy's name, Shalom, to mean peace. There are other names like Rachum and Chanun, which mean to be merciful. They're also names of Hashem, but they're not names that we can't say, we can't utter. The names of Hashem I want to talk about this evening are the ones that we need to change when we say them, like Elohim, where the true name is with a hey instead of a kuf, but we say Elohim because we don't want to actually utter the name of Hashem. The name Hashem itself, we know how we normally pronounce the name of Hashem, but we don't do that when we're talking regularly. So I want to put some of those names on the board and show some of the differences. As we're going to show on Parashat Shmos, here some of those names. Now we know that the main name of Hashem, the name that we have, that, as I said, we can never define his essence, but gets closer than all the other names that we have, is the name that is spelled Yud, and then a Hey, and then a Vav, and then a Hey. We don't even say the letters straight. We don't even say, when people say the letters, they say Yud, K, Vav, K. Instead of Hey, they say K, in order not to say the letters straight. Because there is an opinion that saying the letters straight would be like saying the name of Hashem. And that name, we don't pronounce it as it is written. We don't pronounce it that way. We pronounce it as Adnus. We say Aleph Dalet instead of Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei. So I will write it on the board as follows. Yud, we'll put a dash, and we'll put a Hey, we'll put another dash, we'll put a Vav, we'll put another dash, and we'll put a Hey. So that is the name that is closest that we have to Hashem's true essence, even though, of course, it is not his true essence. Other common names that we have are the name Elohim, which I will spell out but I will put a dash right, I'll put a dash right here. That's Elohim, which we, that's with a hey. That's another name of Hashem. But there are other names that we have. For example, sometimes you have this name, a top name, but it's spelled actually in the letters that you would expect it to be spelled in. It's spelled Aleph, Dalid, Nun, and then a Yud. I'm putting a dash again. These two are pronounced the same way. They're pronounced the same way, but they don't mean the same thing. Or at least, I should say, this means more than what this means. And we'll see in a moment. Then we have names that are less common. These are the most common names that we have. When we daven, we use these names the most. Or this is usually Elokeinu, our God. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Those are names that we're most familiar with. But there are other names as well. We have, for instance, the name Kale. Aleph and then Aleph. Kale, which sometimes is followed by another name. Shakai, but with a dollar. Those are other names. I'm sorry, this didn't come up so clearly. Okay. So, you have these various names of Hashem. There's another name which we almost never use, but it is found in this parsha that we're going to be discussing. We may not even get to it tonight, but that is the name, and this name I will actually say because it means another word. What's that? Well, makom means the place. Right? That's true. But a word that is sometimes, when you want to say, I will be somewhere, the word for I will be is ehaye, I will be. It's ehaye, I will be. Atatihye, you will be. It's a word that means I will be. But sometimes it's used as Hashem's name. In this week's parsha, in Shmos, the name ekye, Aleph and then a hey and then a yud and then a hey, is used as a name of Hashem himself. That's also a name. Sometimes, by the way, just the first two letters of this top name are a name of Hashem. Ka, yud and then hey. That in itself is a name of Hashem. But
sometimes that's an ending for somebody's name too, the yud and the hey.
Right. Well, a lot of names have Hashem's name in it.
Yeah.
Right? My name, Daniel, ends with Aleph Lamed, which is one of Hashem's names. Mm-hmm. Many names are like that. Eliyahu. Eliyahu starts with Aleph Lamed. What's that? Right. A lot of the names have Hashem's name in it. So now, what are the different connotations of these names? Now, I can't tell you specifically each name. I don't know 100% each name. But we know as a general rule that the top name of Yud Kei Vav Kei connotes some form of mercy. Or, a God of mercy. While the next name, Elohim, connotes some element of judgment. That we know. But I want to I want to give a little bit of a deeper insight into some of these names before we tackle some more of the Psukim and the Chumash. Let's start with this name. Aleph, Dalet, Nun, and then Yud, which we know how to pronounce that. Ado, that's how we pronounce it. What does that name connote? What? Okay. The Hebrew word that is in this name is Adon. Adon means master, like Adon Olam, master of the world. Adon means master. So this name means master. That's what it means. And when you use this name, and of course this top name is pronounced the same way, it implies that Hashem is the master of the world. So this name, Adon, we'll put over here, is master. That's what that name implies. So what does it mean to be a master? So the way that many of the Mefarshim, many of the commentaries explain, and I'm relying heavily here on the Ramchal or Moshe Chaim Letzato, many of the commentaries explain that Aleph, Dalet, Nun, and then Yud, Master, Adon, means that everything is dependent on Hashem. The entire universe, both physical and spiritual, are dependent on Hashem. Nothing can exist if not for Hashem willing it to exist. Nothing can do anything. Every breath we take, every movement we make, is because Hashem wills it to happen. That is the concept of Aleph Dalet Nun, Adnos, the Master. Elohim is the corollary to Adnos, to Master. Elohim, the commentators explain, implies that Hashem is independent, where nothing has any control over Hashem. He is the Baal HaYecholos Baal HaKochos Kulam. He is all-powerful. He is completely independent. His power is both limitless and independent. Nothing can control Hashem. Nothing has any effect over Hashem. He is, well, I'll say, you can say all-powerful, but I'm going to say independent. He is independent in his independent. Okay. He is independent, so that really it's the corollary, because Adnos implies that he's the master, which I'm going to change it right now to show that he is. Everything else is dependent on him. He's the master, which means everything is dependent on Hashem. That's Adnos. Elohim is, he is independent. So again, Adnos, Aleph Dalet Nun, is he's the master of everything, which means everything is dependent on him. Nothing can exist, nothing can do anything. Nothing can be here without Hashem. But Hashem doesn't depend on anything else. That's Elohim. He is independent. He is, all the power is his. He doesn't rely on anything else for power. It's all his. He's completely independent. He doesn't exist. He doesn't need anything else to exist. Right.
So, but that's a little confusing, because if Hashem wants us to behave in a certain way,
yes,
so we don't, he reacts differently. So he's,
it's because he chooses to.
Yeah.
But that's, nothing is forcing him to do that.
Well,
other than his own promise. He chose or chooses to act that way. He chooses to reward and to punish. It's not because anything else is forcing him to do that.
Right.
Nothing controls Hashem. So these two...
No, but what I'm saying is, because we have a relationship with
him. I know, but that he chose that. Nothing forced that upon him.
Of course.
Right. So that means he is independent. Nothing... He may choose to lock himself into something. He can say that if you do this, I will make it rain. If you don't do this, I won't make it rain. But that's his choice,
right,
to put himself in that situation. Nothing forced him into that deal.
Which is the name that defined everything is dependent upon Hashem?
That is this one.
Adon.
He's the master. Everything is dependent upon him. Now, the top name, which also means that everything is dependent on Hashem, because we pronounce it this way. It's pronounced the same way, as we'll see in the Chumash. But it has an additional component to it. And that is implied with the Yud, the Hey, the Vav, and the Hey. Because the words, the verb to be in Hebrew is Hoveh, is to be. Haya means he was. Hoveh means he is. Yihyeh means he will be. This name is meant to be a, I don't want to say contraction, it's more a conglomeration of those three concepts of Haya, was, Hoveh, is, and will be. That Hashem is timeless. Hashem supersedes all time. Hashem is not bound by time. He is the first, he is the last, nothing precedes him, nothing follows him. He has no beginning, he has no end. All those lofty concepts, which is impossible for a human being to wrap their minds around, if you try to think about it, you drive yourself crazy. You can't think about what it means to be forever. What does it mean to not have a beginning? What does it mean to not have an end? That's all encompassed in this name, Yod-Kei-Vav-Kei. Transcends everything. Is, was, is, and will be.
All of this is
in Adon Olam.
We consider that like the ultimate name.
Yeah, no, that's the ultimate one that we have. That doesn't mean it's his essence, but it's the ultimate one that we have. So this name implies all of those things. Was, is, and will be. But because we pronounce it as Adnus, it also includes this one. Everything is dependent on Hashem. If when you're saying Shema, and you want to have the most basic translation in your mind, but not simple. Meaning simple would be just, Hear, O Israel, God is, Hashem is our God, Hashem is one. Right? That's the simple translation. If you want to have a little bit more depth to it, but still basic, these are the concepts you'd have in mind. Shema Yisrael, listen, Israel, Hear, O Israel. Hear means to understand. Not just to hear with your ears, but to understand. Hear, O Israel, Hashem, it's this name, and you think to yourself, what is Hashem? Hashem is the one who was, is, and will be, and everything is dependent on Hashem. That's the first, Hashem. Elokeinu, he is our God, which means he is independent. And then you say again, Hashem, you think to yourself, Hashem is was, is, and will be, and everything is dependent on him. Echad, he is one. He is one means there are no parts. There is only one God. That God has no parts. It's not like he has an arm and a leg and a face. He just is one uniform being. That's Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That's a little bit more depth to a basic translation of those words, using the different names of Hashem.
Now, what happens in Tanakh when you find both those words together, like Ado and then Hashem.
Yeah, okay, so hopefully, I'm not sure how far we'll get. We'll see. We'll see what happens as we move along. Now, this one, Kel Shakai, the name Shakai comes from what Hebrew word?
Dai.
Dai means enough. Dai means enough. Kel, we have a word in Hebrew that is the word kale, like the word elim. Elim means power, the powerful ones. And elim are the elei haaretz, are the powerful ones of the land. Kale means power, just straight power, powerful, count powerful. Shakai means that it is enough. So, by itself, Kel just means power, and Shakai means enough. And this, as the Gemara tells us, that when Hashem created the world, when He created the world itself, the physical world itself, takes away from the presence of Hashem. Because before there was a physical world, before there was a universe, all there was Hashem. In some manner or other, this can also drive you crazy, where did he put the world? Where did he put it? There was no space. Everything was Hashem. So when he created space, he created time, those concepts didn't exist, he created the two of them, and he created a universe. Where did he put the universe? Where did he put that space? Where did he put that time? You can't even ask the question. Asking where implies that there is space. But but space didn't exist. Asking when implies that there was time, but time didn't exist. So because human beings can't fathom the concept of no space and no time, we can talk about it intellectually, we can talk about it mathematically, but we can't really visualize it. No space and no time. So therefore, it's impossible to understand what that means. But when Hashem did create the universe, that did therefore detract, so to speak, from Hashem's presence. The world, it says, the universe, was expanding as he created. He created it, it says he created like a ball of yarn, expanding and expanding and expanding. It's like you're rolling a ball of yarn. That's the visual aid that Gemara is trying to give us in explaining what Hashem did, talking about the universe, and expanding and expanding and expanding and expanding. And then Hashem said, enough! And it stopped. Wherever that is. Of course, we haven't... Science hasn't reached the outer limits of the universe yet, whatever that is. So Hashem stopped it. What does the Gemara mean to tell us? The universe, because it's physical, and could be, one could look at the universe and mistakenly believe there is no God, the universe, the physical universe itself, takes away from the presence of Hashem. Hashem wanted the universe to be a certain size, which means he wanted it to have a certain... he wanted it to create a certain sense of acting on its own, meaning that the physical world, one could look at it and say, this is no God, this is all science, it's all nature. He wanted that to be there, because a person has to have a challenge to believe in God. It shouldn't just be everybody knows there is a God, because then there'd be no challenge and there'd be no struggle. Everybody would just always do the right thing. So there's got to be a way of a person deceiving themselves into thinking there is no God. But if the physical universe would expand too much, then it would be impossible for any human being to recognize God. It would be too much. The physical universe has to be a particular size, meaning it's got to have a particular sway over human beings. Enough that it's a challenge to believe in God, but not too much that it's impossible to believe in God. So Hashem calibrated it perfectly. He allowed the universe to expand to a point where it would create the suffix, the doubt. It would create the struggle in man, but not so much that a person couldn't overcome that struggle. And that's Shakai, enough. Kel Shakai, the powerful one who said it is enough. It is enough. His power is still recognizable because he said it's enough. So this name is used when, generally speaking, when we are talking about something which seems to mask Hashem's presence, but he's still there. Or he's still there. And where one could think, maybe he's not there. No. Hashem said it's enough. He is there. He is there. That's where the name is used. The name is used where Hashem is, where there is something going on where a person could think, where's God? But then we realize, no, Hashem really is there. That's Kel Shakai. The power, I'm going to write power. That's Kel. And Shakai, which is more difficult, I have to put it in exact translation, but we'll just write enough, whatever that means.
That relates to the Indian of Simpson?
Yes. Whatever that means. I don't know.
Literally,
I just told you all I know about it. And just one more thing. And Ekyeh means I will be in the future. I will be. That one we're going to try to define as we move along, because that's going to be a hallmark of the discussion between Moshe and Hashem. These are the different names. Now, what I want you to see as we go through... Let me take a question first, Scott.
Because you said a person needs a challenge in order to begin to recognize God. I mean, there has to...
No, the other way around. It has to be that it's a challenge, otherwise it would be too easy.
What about the names of Kos?
We're not dealing with any other names. Okay. Now, yeah.
Very often on a mezuzah case, there'll be a shit.
Yes.
Why?
Because that name, Shakai, is written on the reverse side of a mezuzah. That is a halacha which is derived from Kabbalah, that on the reverse side of the mezuzah, on the front side of the mezuzah of the scroll, you have Shema and V'haya im Shema, the first two paragraphs of Shema. That's what's written on the mezuzah. And that's what a kosher mezuzah is. But according to Kabbalah, on the reverse side, you put the name Shakai.
And that's why the case
will have either the full name Shakai or just the shin. And when you put the scroll, the easy way to do it is after you've rolled up the scroll. You get the scroll, it's all rolled up nice, and then usually it's in like some kind of a wrapper. So what you do is you'll see the name Shakai, because when you wrap up the scroll of a mezuzah, if this is the front side of the mezuzah, when it's wrapped up, you only see the reverse side. You don't see the side of the writing on it. So when it's wrapped up very nicely, you'll be able to see that name Shakai. If you take your scroll out of the case, you'll see the name Shakai on it. So what you're supposed to do is line up the Shakai with the shin, because the Shakai should be facing out. The Shakai should be facing out of the mezuzah. Yeah, let's take a visual here. Here's the mezuzah. No, it's on the outside of the door. Let's see if we can. Yeah, you can't all see it, so let's not use this. Okay, let's pretend. Okay, let's pretend this is my mezuzah case. Remember, the case is not the holy part. It's what's inside the case that's the holy part. So let's say this is my case. So I'm going to affix the case to my door. So I'm going to put it up. I'm going to fix it to my doorpost. So the case usually has a couple of screws or nails, and it goes on in a particular way. But what determines how to fit the scroll in? The scroll, if this were the scroll can be rotated. It can go in upside down. It can go in right side up. It can go in this way. It can be swiveled 180 degrees. How do I know how to put it in properly in the case? So if you locate the name Shakai, let's pretend that word dry is the name Shakai. If you locate the name Shakai, so you make sure it's right side up and not upside down, and then you insert it in the case with the name Shakai facing out, so that it is facing that shin on the case. You don't need to have a shin on the case. But that's why it's there, because it lines up with the name Shakai on the mezuzah. Why the name Shakai is on the mezuzah, I don't know. It's Kabbalah, and I do not know Kabbalah. I am 40, but I don't know Kabbalah.
So Rabbi Akiva, he was the one who went and studied Hashem, and he went in peace, and he came back in peace.
Well, whatever that means, they went to study Hashem, that's already beyond our understanding, at least my understanding, what that means. So, why do I bring all this up? Because I want us to notice, as we are going through these psukim in Shmos, that we are going to see a struggle between Moshe and Hashem. What name is he going to use? We are going to find that predominantly, Hashem is going to begin with this name, with Elohim, which we all know is that name of judgment. That's the name he's going to be using at first. Moshe is going to be trying to say that this would be the better name to use. And they are going to be struggling back and forth over what. Now, of course, Moshe can't know better than Hashem. But there are going to be, it's not an argument, it's that Moshe doesn't want to take this position of leadership when this is the name being used, as we will see as we move along. At one point, Moshe will use this name. And at one point, Hashem will use this name. And then when we get to Parshas Va'era, which will be a while, when we get there, Hashem will complain to Moshe and say, when I appeared to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, I used this name. And they didn't complain about it. And you're bothering me about what name to use. Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they didn't mind when I used this name. So we're going to see this struggle. So again, I'm going to repeat what I just said, because it's different names, and we're not going to get to it all this week. But I just want to show you the idea over here, that Hashem is going to start with this name, and Moshe is going to be suggesting this name. And at one point, Hashem is going to say this one, and Moshe is going to say this one. They're going to be bantering back and forth, almost negotiating about names. And then finally, when it's all over, and Moshe has accepted the position, and he's sent to Paro, and then he goes to Paro, and you know that when he went to Paro, first things get worse before they get better. Paro first makes things worse. He takes away the straw for the bricks, and it gets even worse for the Jews. And Moshe comes back and says, why did you send me? I didn't ask for this. And then Hashem says to Moshe, you know, when I was dealing with Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov 400 years ago, they didn't bother me with names. I used this name, and they were fine. And you're giving me the trouble with names. So there's this whole negotiation going on between Hashem and Moshe about the name of Hashem. And this is going to be something which we really need to pin down. We really need to understand what's going on. I will say at the outset that we are not going to, as always, we're not going to get everything understood. There will be some loose ends. But we're going to try our best to really understand what the issue is here with the names of Hashem. Why one over the other? Why do we start with one and end with a different one? What is the negotiation here?
Don't they signify certain revelations of God?
What's that?
Don't they signify certain revelations of God?
Yes, yeah, certain ways that he presents himself. That's correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do some sukkim. What time is it?
8:05.
Okay. So let's do some sukkim over here. So last time, we read the first few verses of chapter 3, Perek Gimel, dealing with the bush, and the appearance of Hashem, of the angel in the bush, and we had some trouble with the bush burning, and what did Moshe see, what did he not see. I did look around a little bit more, and saw one other explanation, which I want to share with you this evening. Again, it will not answer all the questions, but it's just another perspective which does answer some of the questions we weren't able to answer last week. Let's start with Pasuk Beis, verse 2. And I'm going to read it now according to one of the other commentaries I saw. Vayera malach Hashem elof belavas esh mitoch hasne. And an angel of God appeared to him in a flame, a fire, from inside the bush. Vayar, and he saw, Moshe saw, v'inei asne bo'er bo'esh, and behold, the bush was burning in fire, v'asne einenu ukol, but the bush was not being consumed. Now, did he see an angel? Or did he see fire and not know that it was an angel? Let's assume right now that he saw an angel. He knew that it was an angel. Let's assume that he knew that it was an angel. After all, it says an angel appeared to him. So let's assume that he did know that it was an angel. And he sees that the bush is burning in fire, which makes sense. It's got an angel inside of it, and the angel is appearing as fire, and therefore that fire is burning, yet the bush is not being consumed. Vayomer Moshe, Moshe said, Asura na ve'ereh, I will turn now and see as hamareh hagadol hazeh, this great appearance. Madu'a lo yivar hasneh, why does the bush not burn? Meaning, even if Moshe knew it was an angel, still, the fire is a real fire. The angelic fire is not a fake fire. It's a real fire. It ought to consume the bush. Why does the bush not burn? If there is an angel that is appearing in this bush and it's fire, then it ought to consume the bush. Why does it not consume the bush?
Because there's an angel in it.
Then it ought to consume it.
What?
If an angel appears as fire, it should consume whatever it's touching.
No, because then
but you're saying our first assumption is that he saw an angel.
As fire.
Yeah.
He knew that it was a fiery angel.
Okay. I mean, he saw the fire and knew that it was an angel.
That's real fire. If you touch it, you'll burn your finger.
Okay, but how did he know it was an angel then?
Okay, however he knows. We didn't explain that. The Torah just says that an angel of God appeared to him. Okay. Whatever that means.
Do we know if Moshe had seen angels before?
I don't know. I don't know.
Could it have been because he did not remove his shoes?
Well, we didn't get to that part yet. We'll get to soon.
It says an angel of Hashem appeared to him.
Mm-hmm.
Can something be there and he not actually see it
yet? Yes, that's what we explained last week, that it was an angel, but he didn't know it was an angel. All he saw was fire.
Right.
That's the other way to understand it. Yes. That would be the conventional way of understanding it.
Okay.
That he saw, but it's just difficult why the Torah calls it an angel if he didn't know that it was an angel.
Because it was an angel.
True.
Why? Because in the Torah it says.
But the Torah could have introduced it as a fire was in the bush. He saw a fire in the bush, and it didn't consume the bush. So he said, "What's going on?" And he went to check it out. And then the Torah would tell us it was an angel. Hmm. That would be, you know.
To teach us that an angel can appear in different forms?
Yeah.
Okay. Could be.
I mean, we don't know how angels appear.
Well, we do have other examples of angels appearing, like the classic one with Abraham, when they appeared as regular people.
Yeah, but then there were other angels.
That was way before they moved to Egypt.
True, that's true.
Didn't an angel appear as fire? The angel came in the fire.
Well, Bilab as Esh. Okay.
I find interesting that in another verse or two, we're going to come to where God called after him.
Yes, yes.
And it could be that first God chose to have an angel there to see if Moshe would even react at all before God.
That's what it appears is happening, that Hashem is trying to lead Moshe into it slowly but surely. And when Moshe reacts, that's the next pasuk, Vayar Hashem ki sar liros, Hashem saw that he turned to see, Vayikra elav Elokim mitoch hasneh, Elohim calls to him from within the snare, within the bush. Vayomer Moshe, Moshe. Vayomer Hineni. He says Moshe, Moshe. He says Here I am. Now I do want to emphasize the names of Hashem. But before I do that, let me make another observation here. Hashem is appearing in a bush. What are the letters for this bush? Let's put those letters up on the board. This will be interesting for you. We'll put it right in the middle over here.
So rather back in
my
era,
the way the Torah says it is hasneh. The word hasneh, the bush, appears five times in these three verses. If you notice, in pasuk Beis verse 2, it says the word hasneh three times.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the next pasuk it says it once. And the next pasuk says it once again. Five times it says the word hasneh, the bush.
Maybe five books of Torah?
Hold on. Hasneh. Hey, samach, nun, hey. That's where Hashem appears. Now, where is this happening? What location on earth is this bush?
Mount Sinai.
How do you spell?
Oh, cool.
Samach. Samach, Yud, Nun, Yud. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Samach and Nun are the same letters, and we replace the two Hays with the two Yuds.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
There are many cases where
the Yud
changes to
Yaakov, Sarah
and Sarai.
Sarai and Sarah, good, you have that. It is striking to me, as Mrs. Kaiser just said, that these letters, the Hays and the Yuds, are very much...
Right.
Now, there's no Vav. It's Yud, Hay, and Yud, and Hay. But those are the letters that are most associated with Hashem's name. The Medrash tells us, the Gemara tells us, that Hashem created the world, the universe, with the name Ka. Yud and Hay. Well, let's just look over here. That Hashem created the universe with the first two letters of His name. The Yud is the spiritual world, and the He is the physical world.
Why the ones?
Ki b'ka Hashem tzur olamim. The two worlds were created, one with the yud and one with the hey. It is striking to me that Hashem appears to Moshe in hasneh, with the two heys, in the samach and the nun, and then later, in the same place, later, it will be, he appears on Har Sinai. The two hays become yuds. The name Sinai is not mentioned yet. Over here, if you look back in Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, where it says that he came to the mountain of God, it doesn't say Sinai. The name Sinai is not mentioned over here. The first time the name Sinai is mentioned is in Parshas Yisro, when the Torah is talking about the giving of the Torah itself, when they come back to Mount Sinai. Here, this is the first time of three different encounters with Har Sinai. This is the first. The second will be when Moshe is returning to Egypt. He's going to go after this negotiation with Hashem. He's going to go back to his father-in-law. He's going to pick up his wife and children and go to Egypt. He will meet on the way. Who will he meet?
Aaron.
Where will they meet? On Har Sinai. It doesn't say Har Sinai there either. It just says on the mountain of Hashem. They meet there, and then they go to Egypt. And then later, after they leave Egypt, they come back to this mountain. It's Moshe's third time on the mountain, and it's finally called Sinai. Sinai is Hasneh, but change the Hays to Yuds. I just wonder... I wonder if we're moving from Hashem is appearing first in the bush, which is a lowly bush, which connotes physicality, which Hashem has not yet revealed himself. The greatest revelation Hashem ever did in this world is the giving of the Torah. There never was a revelation like that before, and there hasn't been since. The giving of the Torah itself. So initially his appearance is as Hasneh, in a very physical way, and then later it will be transposed to Sinai, to the entire mountain burning in fire, where they could see the thunder and hear the lightning, where there's all kinds of things that are just impossible, where they could hear two words at the same time, like Zohar and Shamar being uttered simultaneously and being able to perceive both words at the same time, something which is physically impossible to do. But that's going to be when it's Sinai, when it's Hashem's appearance on the mountain is from Hasneh to Sinai itself.
The mountain it wasn't known as Sinai when Abraham and Jacob were there either, right?
They were never at that mountain. They were at Har HaMoriah. Oh, yeah. They were at the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. This is in the desert.
I would assume the yuds and the hay have like one spiritual, one physical. Like, do you know what that means literally? Like does the hay mean like a word?
That's what the Medrash, it says that those two letters are the ones. Saying why did he use those letters?
Yeah,
that's that. It is discussed. It is discussed.
We need to drink water.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Fine. Now, let's notice the names of Hashem. The In Pasuk Beis, verse 2, it says an angel of Hashem, and it uses Yud, Ke, Vav, Ke. We'll call that the ultimate name. The ultimate name of Hashem. The angel of God, and it uses the ultimate name. Yud, Ke, Vav, Ke. Then, in Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Vayar Hashem Kisar Liros, again it says Yud, Ke, Vav, Ke. But then, it says, Vayikra Elav Elokim. Even though it says that Hashem saw that he turned to look, but that's not the name that he used when he called out to Moshe. He called out to Moshe with the name Elokim. The Torah itself is calling our attention to this by saying that Hashem, Yudkevavke, saw that he turned, and Hashem called out to him as Elohim. The Torah itself is announcing this to us. This is obvious. Anybody reading this should say, what do you mean? Hashem saw, but Elohim called out? Why change names? Clearly, the Torah wants us to notice that although it was Hashem Yudke Vavke that saw him turn, but Hashem did not initially call to him with that name. meaning with that, projecting that image. Hashem was projecting the image of Elohim when he called out to Moshe, not the image of Yud Kei Vav Kei. In the paragraph immediately preceding this, which we learned before Pesach, and we showed there that Hashem, the various steps that we were going through, that Hashem was moving towards taking the Jews out of Egypt, there also it is all Elohim. That Hashem heard their cries, Elohim heard the groans, Elohim remembered his covenant, Elohim saw, Elohim knew, it's all Elohim. And here, Moshe, in his first encounter with Hashem, where Hashem calls out to him from within the bush, it is using the name Elohim. That does not mean that it wasn't gentle. That doesn't mean it wasn't gentle. As I mentioned to you last week, when he called to Moshe, he said, Moshe, Moshe, which is an endearing way of speaking, using the name twice. He used the voice of Moshe's father, Amram, in order to be gentle, not to frighten Moshe. It was not necessarily a frightening call to Moshe. It was gentle. Nonetheless, the image that Hashem was projecting was one of Elohim, not one of Hashem. I don't know how he projected that image, but Moshe knew. When Moshe was called, Moshe understood, this is Elohim. This is using the name of Elohim when I'm being called to. And we will see that's why Moshe is going to struggle with this job that he's being offered.
Using the name of Elohim implies what?
Well, so far it implies independence, but we all know it implies judgment.
Aren't those two concepts very different?
You want to know how one means the other?
Well,
let's leave that for now.
Independence and judgment don't seem
to be... Yeah, I understand. Let's leave that for now. Okay, so Hashem calls to Moshe, but uses the name of Elohim. So Moshe says, Hineni, here I am. And Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Vayomer al tikrav halom, and he said, don't get close to here. Moshe was turning to move towards the bush, and Hashem tells him, don't get close. Shal mi'alecha me'al raglecha, take your shoes from upon your feet, take your shoes off. Ki ha'makom ha'sha'ata omeid alav, for the place that you are standing upon it, atmas kodeshu, it is holy ground. This is startling that Hashem is saying this. The reason why this is startling is because we know that there are holy places in the world. And we know that on those holy places, it is appropriate to remove one's shoes. What is the holiest place on earth? The Beis HaMikdash, the temple. And we know that the Kohanim were not allowed to wear shoes. They had to do their service barefoot. The Torah is very specific about what they could wear and what they could not wear. They could only wear four garments. They couldn't wear anything else when they were performing the service. It was just these four garments. And shoes or socks were not included in the wardrobe. It was barefoot. In fact, the Gemara, in discussing the rules and laws of the Beis HaMikdash, of the service in the temple, says that if a Kohen would not have his feet on the ground, he would step off the ground, put his foot on top of something else, and do the service would be invalid. They have to be barefoot with their feet on the ground. The ground was made of marble in the Beis HaMikdash, which was cold. So just so you can have some sense of empathy for your fellow Kohanim in their service in the Beis HaMikdash.
Does that mean if they walked?
No, that was okay. Yes. It was okay, but they couldn't stand on, let's say, stand on a container or something, or stand on a pail or whatever it is. There seems to be an importance in contact with the ground. The ground is holy, and therefore don't separate yourself from the ground by wearing shoes. We know that today there is something that is done without shoes, also by Kohanim. They do the Birchas Kohanim. They duchen, when they bless us, they take off their shoes.
And socks?
They leave their socks on.
They leave their socks on.
Take off their shoes. Now, it's not necessarily the exact same reason, but there we do find that the concept of a Kohen removing his shoes. Here, Hashem says to Moshe, remove your shoes because the ground upon which you're standing is holy. The reason why it's so striking that the Torah says this is because we know from later on when the Torah discusses the giving of the Torah itself, when Hashem descends upon Har Sinai, that Mount Sinai is not a holy place. It is not in Israel. It is just a mountain in the wilderness. It does not inherently have kedusha, have holiness. As opposed to the Temple Mount, which even today is still holy. Even with the abominable mosque on the Temple Mount, it is still a holy place. The kedusha, the sanctity, doesn't leave the place. It's still holy, because that's the site of the temple. And it never left. But Har Sinai is different. Har Sinai only became holy when Hashem descended upon it. What time is it? Yes, I do. But when Hashem left, it was no longer holy. And here, when Hashem tells Moshe the place is holy, that means Hashem is telling Moshe, my presence is here. My presence, I am making this place holy right now. That's what's startling about it. We'll have to pick this thought up when we resume next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.